Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the work session. It's Tuesday, April 21st at 8 a.m. Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
Mayor O'Neill?
Here.
Mr. Cleworth?
Here.
Ms. Therrien is excused. Ms. Sprinkle?
Here.
Ms. Tidwell?
Here.
Mr. Marnie?
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstead?
Here.
Thank you. Item number two, a resolution awarding a contract to Coalaska Incorporated for the Shannon Drive Utility Improvements Project in the amount of $1,387,520. This has not been introduced yet. Is Mr. Zinza here to introduce us? Come on up, Mr. Zinza.
So item number two, it's a resolution to award the contract to Coalaska for an amount of $1,387,520. We got the fiscal note behind it. Is there any questions on this?
Ms. Sprinkle.
Is this something that we already budgeted for in our capital fund?
It was mostly budgeted for. There's a couple projects that, was I supposed to? Okay,
mm-hmm.
Sorry.
That's okay.
There's a couple projects that slid to next year, 2027.
Oh.
And so the bids came in higher. So we were able to pull from those funds.
Okay, so we've got this money already accounted for.
Correct.
I don't have my budget book. I'm sorry. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Ringstead? Okay. Mr. Cleworth?
That's so I think most of this money comes from fast planning. It's
okay.
In the city improvements projects for this year, and Shannon Park was one of those. But we do have to have a match, and we do have that match in the budget. Is that correct?
Correct. And we do have we're partnering with GHU, so it's like as we're ripping up the road, we're offering them the opportunity to upgrade their utilities, which they are. They're taking that, so that's a betterment for them. But they're also sharing costs. You know, like we prorate the costs out, like Mobin, D-Mob, things like that. So they're sharing part of the expense of the road construction, too.
So this is our part, the 532.
No, that's combined. It's a combined contract. The GHU contract is being done through the city, so that we have a separate agreement with GHU to pay us.
Okay. All right, that's cool. So out of our pocket, we're paying $1.3 million. We get money back from fast planning and GHU. Is that what I'm hearing?
Correct.
Okay. No, it's not right.
Oh, sorry.
No. Just a clarification. When the city budgeted for under road maintenance, we budgeted for this project at $280,000.
Okay.
We budgeted $55,000 for Shannon surface improvement projects, which we're going to use for this particular part of the project. And we also had budgeted $200,000 for 6th and 7th sidewalk. So what Mr. Zinza was referring to was the 6th and 7th sidewalk is going to be covered through fast planning, which means now they can use those funds for this project.
Okay.
And this is a city project, and it is a combination between the city and GHU. And GHU is going to pay $854,850 of this $1.3 million project.
Okay.
Just a clarification.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Marnie?
Kim, will this happen this summer?
Yes.
Thank you.
Any more questions? All right.
I do have one, Mayor.
Mr. Cleworth?
This is a little off topic, but I asked a question at the last council meeting, and the projects for the coming year, one of them was listed as 8th Avenue Path. And I had talked to Bob Pristash about that, and he was unaware of what that was. Does anybody know what that project is?
She does.
Are you talking about the one that you brought up that was in the list for
Yeah.
It's in North Pole. It's a North Pole project.
Oh.
It's the city of North
Pole. It's not our 8th. They're 8th Avenue.
Yeah, which it didn't say that. Like, when we saw it that first time, I thought the same thing, but it is a North Pole project.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Zola. Moving on to item three, presentation on blighted properties and abatement efforts. Mr. Zarid.
Good
The council, good morning. I just want you to know that the snow was already in the forecast when I put a grill in the back of my pickup on Saturday. So. All right, let me just test this clicker here. All right, excellent. All right, so I prepared a short 87-slide deck for you guys. No, not quite that long. But just give you guys a review of what we've done in 2025 and a glimpse into what we have planned for 2026 at this stage. So 2025, we started in the Slaterville subdivision. So this is a cleanup over on Noyes Street. You know, I have a ton of pictures in the interest of not overloading everyone. I did not, you know, load it to where you can see the full scope of some of these projects. In this example there, this property had two intact and one burned up RV and shed and some pretty prodigious piles of stuff, tires, etc. But this is one of our very first projects here. So as you can see before on the left of the backyard and then the afterwards with one of our awesome public works guys and then the final kind of cleanup in place as we've gone through it. Next, moving on to Charles Street in the same subdivision. In our efforts to how to start, we kind of identified, of course, citizen complaints and where we could see clusters of activity. And we tried to focus initially on neighborhoods where we can make an immediate impact in one neighborhood and try and raise that neighborhood value and community spirit in, you know, one fell swoop as much as possible. So a similar instance here, three RVs on site. You can see they've basically walled themselves off. And you see the after picture of the last mini packer load there coming out of the place over on Charles Street. And moving on, 17th Avenue, you can see one Jeremiah Cotter for scale in the front yard, and then the after on the right. So if you look at the Jeremiah picture on the far right of that picture, you can see a small satellite dish, which is the one in the reference picture on the right. This is the front side yard, not in the driveway. This property was our largest cleanup completed in terms of removed junk. This was 13 40-yard roll-off containers by my count, and it was not complete. We, you know, in working with the owner, here's the things that we're going to leave you, here's the things that we're not, right? This process can be a bit of a give and take in some cases, and but that's what's hauled out of there. That was a four-day project in coordination between Public Works, Golden Heart Waste, and the Fairbanks Rescue Mission brought in some of their equipment and labor as well to assist the city with manpower availability and also costs. And then our largest one in total, the Willow Street project, you know, I know that's been discussed here many times, and there were so many pictures of the before that you can't see the scale of it, right? So I just put in the satellite overhead on this particular one, but the photo on the right, the structure was demolished, but the photo was so pretty with the clouds in the sky, I just left that one in there. But you see, this ultimately was taken down to the dirt, and backfilled by CEI with the hazardous demolition that they did of the asbestos structure, and everything removed, and it's now a lot, you know, ready for purchase, sale, and further things. M- Moving on to the Aurora subdivision, over on Carr Avenue, there's this lot that had been abandoned for close to 35 years by my findings. Abandoned camper, two dilapidated buildings, multiple vehicles, and just some appliances and stuff left. This one was declared a blight, but was cleaned up voluntarily by the new owner who had acquired it literally during the blighting process. So that one worked out in our favor for sure. And this after photo, there's no more fence about to fall onto a child. Nothing that someone's going to get stuck in or create nuisance behaviors. It's now a beautiful little wooded corner lot. Farther down Carr Avenue is this property here. This is one that was blighted farther into the process. We kind of initially, the process was going better than we kind of expected, right? We didn't quite know what to expect being the first year, but it was going well enough that we went into round two between myself, Mayor Cruz, Jeremiah, on some additional properties. So this one here is the example of a classic example of the hoarding family and, you know, just collecting stuff and not being able to let it go. So the after photo is not actually the final after photo. I didn't have one in my phone. But again, in the give and take and working with the ownership of it, moving, you know, getting rid of the things you can, moving the things that are actually of value, moving them into an organized location, get them covered up in there. So just know that that after picture is not actually complete. It's just the closest one I had for that. I didn't get one 2 weeks later, unfortunately. And then a couple of properties that have rolled into 2026. We have on the left is a property on Turner Street. This is a very large hoarding situation. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 possible vehicles and a huge amount of stowed materials, front, side, and backyard. Literally, when we served the blight notice, it took the police officer and I 3 attempts to even find a path to the structure. And things were falling over behind us as we wiggled through. So good luck if you ever needed a fire EMS response to that property. Now this one had a property cleanup plan that was approved by Mayor Pruse and upon request, a formal request, he was granted an extension to July 31st of this year. So the property owner has until then to have the front yard as seen here and the side yards back to where you can essentially see the chimney on the left side of the structure, to have that cleaned up this year and then the backyard next year, because it's large enough, you know, that was the agreement. If he does not make it by that deadline, then the city will abate the entire lot this year. And this one here, I would expect this to cost a minimum of $25,000 up to $35,000 just because of the sheer amount of materials. And this is one that I would not want other organizations to deal with. I would hope that Public Works and me could work on this to get it done as rapidly as possible, just to be done with it. And then on the right, back to Carr Avenue, this is the sister lot to the one I showed you before. And again, what I said, it's a hoarding family. So this is generational collecting, and this property really needs some help. You can see that tree fell over on it last fall and still is there today, unless something has, you know, slid off with the recent winds that is of today. So this is an example of one that's a small. This is not a huge cleanup, but it's one where the owner has been literally has never spoken to the city. It's literally been his family that has talked to us and tried to come up with property cleanup plans and what arrangements can be made. Going through a list of voluntarily abated properties, So all the prior ones were ones that were declared blighted properties per the ordinance. These are just ones that are the traditional abatement property, litter letters, things like that. So this one here, this is 24th and Rickert lot. You see it became basically a RV park, you know, for running and non-running vehicles, you know, temporary shelter location. And the property owner was aware of it, but was willing to work with it. And got it removed down to the two inoperable vehicles seen, and the refuse pile in the foreground was removed. So this is one we'll definitely be keeping an eye on in that area as we move further into 26 and beyond. Aurora Subdivision, this is actually the very first property that I addressed. This is one where vehicles proliferated on the street, junk vehicles, litter and waste. The smaller picture down below is a shot from the road of a burned out structure that people had been residing in and was burned up. The owner over the summer did voluntarily abate this. It was never declared a blight. And you can see the after there, the structure that was burned up in the back, which the fire marshal is concerned about, has been demoed and removed. And the lot has been secured, and the front is now, you know, cordoned off so vehicles can't be dumped there as easily. And it looks like that, well, plus some snow today. 16th Avenue, in working with police, this is the property that the police and had boarded up because there was stabbing and shooting there. Squatter house, right? The owner out of state and had been occupied without his knowledge and, you know, trashing the place pretty thoroughly inside. It wasn't blighted or anything. The owner, when contacted and was made aware of the state, wanted to clean it up and sought some local contractor quotes and things like that, and ultimately came back and said, hey, can you guys clean it up and just bill me? We said, oh, okay. So we made it happen. So see the evidence there on the right. And now this property has gone through the foreclosure process and now is in the hands of a property management company who's looking to get it up and ready for sale again. All right. Voluntary cleanup program. I am missing one here. Well, there was 26 in Wilson. I don't know where my slide disappeared to on that. But that one was voluntarily abated away. See if it comes up later in the slide deck if it disappeared on me and got shuffled away. All right, voluntary program test properties. We had two properties that we ran a test on. One was 8th and Lacey property on the left there. You see the abandoned RV, appliances, just, you know, collections of stuff. And then over in the 3rd Avenue, down in the utility area, the resident had allowed a transient to take up residence on the property, and that transient over a couple of years had brought a lot of stuff from transfer sites and had built it up there. So there is quite a bit of stuff in there. This ultimately took two cans for the 3rd Avenue property. And it was a really good example of the test program because all the city did was provide the can, less than $300. And the family of the resident were the volunteers. You know, they were putting in the sweat equity to help the resident. And there was the goal of the plan is to provide one dumpster, right? It's not to fund large cleanups. However, we got one can in, and the family goes, hey, there's still stuff here we'd like to get rid of. Can we get a second can? And I go, well, that's not really the scope of the program, but I could call Golden Heart Waste right now on the phone, and I'm sure that they could get you a can back here that you could pay for, and then you would just be, you know, project done, and off you go. And having that person who could connect them right there on the spot, they went with that route. So that extra $1,000 or so expense for the second can and landfill dump. They did it and, you know, cleaned it up. So back to a clean lot. So that was a very good indicator that the program, you know, the direction that I was trying to move toward was a good route. So on looking ahead at 2026, so looking at properties, thinking now if the areas that we kind of focused on last year, looking at other areas this year. So there's areas like Trainer Gate and Southside is kind of where the focus may lie this year primarily. So if we're looking at Trainer Gate in that area, so we have this property over on Dunbar. And similar story to, you know, the noise property and some of the other ones there. Doesn't appear, to the best of we can tell, to be a crime issue or anything, just we're collecting stuff. And then this property on C Street here, this is a double lot, so it's got a pretty decent-sized house, and then this empty strip behind it where all those vehicles are collecting, and things are just there. It appears to be everything from old mining gear to collection of vehicles, possibly from auctions and things, construction debris. There's another old RV on site, and it's just not, you know, people aren't cleaning up after themselves. So this picture doesn't show the whole story like I've said earlier. These properties here, now Southside, there's two properties in the 27th, 28th area. And the 28th Avenue spot, as you can see there, consistently issues with vehicles being unmoved in the street, in the right-of-way. So this property has been an issue for Public Works for multiple years in terms of snow removal and those types of things. Possible environmental stuff going into the soils. Police has been in the area. So this is one that we are definitely looking at this year because the yard is now just full of vehicles. There's no room to put anything else essentially at this point. And then the Barnett location, that's a photo from this winter. And this is literally northwest, one lot diagonally. So from the 28th Avenue property. Yeah, this is so it's 27th and Barnett there. So it's kitty corner, so to speak, across the alleyway. So this is a continuance where a lot of the properties we were looked at last year, there were a couple of them that were on police's mind, right, FPD's mind. And this area is another one where there's definitely the litter and waste and things, but there's also public safety questions, you know, for the area and concerned about that. So these ones are likely to be getting a letter here in the next 2 weeks. Specific types of letters, yes. The Barnett Street one is an interesting one where the owner died in place without a will or trust. And people are in residence there. But the next of kin who served an eviction letter to their people on site, the court was not able to recognize any authority because he wasn't actually, you know, there was no will or trust, so he was not, he couldn't legally serve an eviction is what the court system told him. So this place might be a touch tricky as we move through it, but it's definitely one that needs to be addressed. Over here on Bajaramark, this is kind of close to the old gas station that's being built right now, the Circle K. You know, lot full of trash and things that aren't moving the right direction. And then in partnerships with other departments, right, I've mentioned police already. These are things that have either ongoing or planned to be addressed by other departments. So we have the 3rd Avenue property over there, which the buildings department has been in contact since last year and before. So we have a plan on that to address it this summer rather than later if the property owner does not follow through with what he promised Christoph. And then also this 25th Avenue property where it's a mobile home with this outbuilding storage garage where you can see it's been collapsed, and that's been for a couple years now. And this property over on Slater Drive as well, a lot of citizen complaints. So again, in partnership with buildings, they have a plan, and we're clued in to work together as needed this year. And then Fairbanks Fire Department has ongoing issues over here on Cushman Street. So we'll be working together on that property as needed. So this is out things, places coming from the code task force, which we've rolled out over the winter, and tried to build those partnerships between departments and continue to break down siloed information. So this is the next step and things that I am excited to see happening in their early form to continue that process. And then just briefly about the voluntary property cleanup program. My goal is 10 to 15 properties. The program went live for application about a week and a half ago, and I've already got half a dozen here within the city, and there was that many or more that came to the that came into the application process, and there were properties that were not within the city because, you know, people had to make that distinction and understand that. So good news on that is I referred those to the borough planning department because the borough told me that they're rolling out a copycat program this spring and summer as well. So, you know, I will say imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, and that's all the self-backpatting I will do. So this just a snippet from our own website here. Thanks to Mike Sanders for helping me get started on building this and just explaining the program. And like I said, 10 to 15 properties I believe is very achievable. And if the and the way that the program has gone in the past, that's going to cost, you know, roughly $7,500 out of our abatement budget. So it doesn't cost that much. It's just some legwork to get the things set up and make happen. So just some practical considerations, lessons learned, and just some notes for you guys to be aware of. Carryover from blights last year will affect this year. Those two, the one is very is comparatively small over on Carr. The one on Turner, as I mentioned, is very large. So with a budget of $125K, if that thing costs $30K, then, you know, there's that chunk of the budget's gone already, right? So have to keep that in mind with the planning. The Willow Street abatement put the budget line over by 30 grand. That was a fairly unique one with a full hazardous demo, environmental assessment, but it's an example of unforeseen cost increases. There are some things that, you know, Jeremiah and I have learned to, okay, maybe we need to be a little bit more conservative in the, this might cost more than we think. So again, lesson learned year one. But the other thing is mainly, most importantly, I want to keep her smiling at me. You know, and then you guys in maybe that order. I don't know. And then note that it was actually mostly smooth sailing in 2025. No legal challenges. Over half of the properties that were in that I put in contact with voluntarily abated their conditions, declared blight or otherwise, and there were no threats or physical violence occurred. So just awareness of the things that are on my mind and our minds through this process, that things actually went pretty smooth overall last year. And, of course, property recidivism can occur. And that's one thing that the properties from last year, seeing how they're doing. One, I'm not sure about, right? There might be some backsliding there. And if it's only one out of all those ones that we cleaned up, maybe that's good. But that's something that, you know, it'd be great if we could clean up a property and it's a fresh start for them and, you know, they see the light and off they go. That's not always the case. And then also in large scale encampment cleanups, they are billed to the same budget line. So I don't know of any right now that are going to affect that budget line, but, you know, it's an awareness thing. And then lastly, Fairbanks General Code updates are kind of necessary for code clarity and enforcement in some instances. That's something that I believe that needs to happen to make things easier for the city and easier for the citizenry, and just make some things stick better. So some resolution or resolutions will be coming soon with the TM for your consideration on that. And that is everything. Cool. Comments, questions?
Thank you for your presentation. Ms. Sprinkle?
I love you. I love this program. So with regards to general feel to the projects that you're doing, do you find that the neighbors are, I mean, is this a win for the city? Do you get that? Like, oh, my gosh, this is fabulous. Thank you.
And yes.
And the neighbors.
Yes.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. When the 17th Avenue property, which took out the 13 cans, right, there were pedestrians crossing the street to literally say hi and high-five us.
Mm.
There, you know, there's a police cruiser parked on 17th to just help control traffic as the abating vehicles and equipment came in and out. And there were drivers who were stopped and blocked traffic entirely to high-five the police officer sitting in the cruiser.
Right.
So, yes. The community perception, I think, is very positive.
A few more. Okay, you talked about the repeat offenders, so that's a different animal. It sounds like we have to wrestle that a little teeny bit.
Yeah. On the good side, like I said, there was one property I'm worried about. Another property, which I was starting to worry about, has already applied for the voluntary cleanup program, going, hey, a lot of the stuff you left, we looked at it and decided it was just junk after all. I don't got no money. Can we get it?
Fantastic.
Yeah, which to me, all right.
So when you look at a property, we have Turner Street, they're trying to clean it up. Do you go in and I think you said you could decide it's a blight in the midst of a project, yes? Before it's even a blight, they could say, hey, I want you to help me clean it up. And you look at the project and say, gosh, this is really a little more serious. We're going to have to call this a blight. Is that a thing that happens or no?
Well, so when we started last year, the voluntary concept it hadn't come up yet.
Okay.
Right? So, and it certainly didn't exist. So it wasn't even discussed, but keep in mind that the blighted properties, almost every single one of them is something that would require multiple cans and or tows. That's something that's come up a lot is tows. A lot of, you know, here's the 40-year-old RV camper van, you know, that's going inoperable vehicles. And the voluntary cleanup program doesn't currently have anything related to tows involved in it. So no to your question. Now, if it came up to where, hey, you know, I've got help, I'm willing to do it, can we get a can type of thing, then in this case, the noise property from the very first slide, we did provide a can at no cost to them in partnering with Mayor Prues, going, how do we want to approach this when they're willing to clean up themselves?
Mm-hmm.
And so we tried that out, and they had two cans that we took to that property and loaded up.
When you showed us a property that was boarded up, it had been the owner out of state.
Yes.
16th Avenue.
Yes, ma'am.
When you board up a place like that, do you allow people to move back into a place that is still boarded up?
So the boarding up happened while I was actually on vacation. It was in contact thing. That was boarded up by Fairbanks Police. And in terms of reentering when it's boarded, it would be, in that case, it was up to the police. So when the property management company, you know, all these months later said, hey, we want to get in there and assess and start working on it, we just had to check with Deputy Chief Sweet. Now, to go to your specific question of could we allow people back in, if we've boarded up a place, if it's been declared a dangerous structure by the buildings department and unfit for occupancy, then reentry would not be allowed. Outside of that, it hasn't come up yet where it's been something that's boarded up. That would be new.
I have one case where I've seen it, and they live in it, It's still boarded up. It's been, it just looks to me like a strange thing. So I can follow up with you on that.
Okay.
It seems like blight that we're allowing. But okay, very good. Thank you.
Ms. Sybil.
Could you remind me, I know I feel like some of these properties have ended up in our possession. When we spend money on a project, does that end up a lien to that property, or is there a threshold? Could you just remind me of the financial?
Now, any property that's involuntarily abated results in a lien on the property, the exception possibly being the Willow project, where we are acquiring the property. If it's a voluntary cleanup, and they use the voluntary cleanup program, then that's that one can is provided at no cost, which if we have the waiver from the borough, then it's less than $300 for a single day dumpster. So it's a great value to the city to just aid that process along.
And Councilmember Tidwell, just to add a detail to that, the lien is not automatic. The lien comes to you as the council to determine that, number one, all of the accounting was proper, and number two, that a lien should be placed on person or property. That's ultimately your decision. It's not an automatic thing. And, of course, the property owner has the right of appeal during that process. So there is a procedure there.
Mr. Cleaver?
Thank you. On the Barnett property, the court determined that their heirs cannot make a decision. City attorney can correct me on this, but I think then that property reverts to the state of Alaska. I'm sorry, would we be dealing with the state of Alaska in this case as far as abatement goes there?
As of last week when I looked at it, there had been no movement on the borough ownership, deeds or anything on that. So I don't know if it would be a bank versus the state. Haven't crossed that bridge yet. If Tom had any input on that, then I would appreciate it.
Councilmember Cleworth, you're correct. Eventually, if no one steps forward to probate the estate, the state of Alaska actually steps in that process. The probate court is very slow to move that process forward. It's been something that we've dealt with over in Bonnefield and some other places that have been kind of a similar situation. But ultimately, you're correct. The state, unless it fell into tax foreclosure, in which case the borough might step up, but the state would step into that place. I think the courts really would prefer if somebody stepped forward to, so you're talking about a situation where there's not a will, and so it's a probate situation, and there's enough of an asset there that you have to probate. It's not an informal probate situation. The courts prefer if someone, a family member, somebody steps forward in that, and I think they just, out of an overabundance of caution, kind of give a lot of time for that to happen. It's just not a top priority for them. I've talked to the probate court about this multiple times because it puts us in a weird spot to try to deal with the property. They've suggested that the city should probate. I am firmly opposed to that. But the state, I think it is appropriate, as Councilmember Cleworth, to step into that role.
And for that property, just to clarify perhaps, the closest kin has stated that they want the property. They want to move to Fairbanks and live in Fairbanks. So that's another wrinkle in the potential probate and possession process.
Sorry to belabor this conversation more than necessary, but ultimately, if there is a nuisance property, a danger, a health hazard, whatever, I mean, I am of the mind that I'm not waiting for the probate process to play out. If this is a danger to health and safety, we'll act on it accordingly and, pay a contractor or whatever to bulldoze the place or whatever needs to happen to make sure that it's a safe space. And then just it would be up to the council to place a lien on the property, and then once it was probated, eventually that lien would have to be cleared accordingly.
Great.
Thank you so much for your work on this, and it's really great to see this program kind of blossom and lessons learned be incorporated into another successful year. So thanks for your leadership on this. Appreciate it. Jack, can I ask you to flip the lights on? Thank you. All right, item four is the Polaris RFP. There's a few handouts that are on your desk to help facilitate the changes. I'm going to start by saying we really wanted to keep these changes very minimal. So the next week, while you're looking over that, we just wanted to keep that in mind. This first page that is entitled, it's the kind of the columns, the Polaris side-by-side comparison. Not all of these amendments made it into the RFP, but generally these were the amendments that were made. So I wanted to in the name of transparency, put that in one sheet so you were able to really review what we were doing here. And as a reminder, you know, we asked for the extension on the RFP, so we were able to discuss and hold some very pointed focus groups, a survey that was publicly available, and collect some community input so we could guide the RFP in a direction that really reflected the community's best interests. And from that process is really what you'll see as any changes that are in the RFP. So I have kept the RFP in the format that was originally provided to the council, and any of the changes that have been proposed are in a pink or red color. You'll see that there are some, but not much. And again, I just want to reiterate that these are incorporating community comments and feedback that we received. I don't believe this substantially changes the RFP in any way whatsoever. I think it just tightens it a little bit for a meaningful RFP process. So we can walk through this. On page three is the first change. This is just an expansion of that first paragraph. We deleted the first line and then added some words that that we heard in our focus group, consistent year-round presence. We wanted a provision for local business strength, a downtown experience, things like that. So that's the changes that you'll see in that first paragraph, which really sets up the RFP for a nice expectation of what we're looking for. Moving on to page four, under preferred outcomes, adding year-round activity, a safe and well-maintained public realm, and an active, people-oriented ground floors. This is nothing different than what was included at the beginning, just called out more clearly and in a way that can be enforced through the RFP process. The July 31st date is reflected under the initial submittals on page four. Moving on to page five, we added an additional paragraph that identifies site control. So this drives a developer proposal to indicate to us how the phasing would happen, what it would look like when during the process of development, and how that will develop over time. In the project overview, we included a few provisions that included things like how this property would develop in conjunction with the rest of downtown, so that not only the property works in conjunction with the other properties that are in downtown, but also the transportation facilities surrounding it. Moving on to section E, community uses and access was added. This was to identify a need for ADA and public accessibility, identifying that spaces should be welcomed for all ages, incomes, and abilities, and be available year-round. Further on in that section adds, again, just more clarifying language that describes community partnerships, public-facing benefits, and ways that commitments can be measurable to the community. Under the proposal evaluation, when we received the evaluation draft from Mr. Hovey, there was a two-stage evaluation process, and so we clarified that within the RFP, and you'll see that as well reflected in the evaluation. And so this just out details the initial proposal and shortlisting as the stage one, which has its own evaluation criteria, and then stage two that allows the developer to get more specific and have a more detailed conversation with the interviewing committee. Moving on to item, or page nine, ground floor active uses. Again, including primary street frontage, transparent publicly engaging spaces, and year-round street activity. I hope by now you're sensing a theme. So we are seeing that we're strengthening the information that we collected back from the community without being overly prescriptive on what a design is or what we want to see, but what we want the outcomes to and how we want the outcomes to impact the community. This paragraph that starts with while compliance with threshold requirements is required for consideration just expands in the sentence below it that is removed, including the environments and place-based design. That's relative to a building that works in interior Alaska. Again, in the supplemental evaluation criteria, repeating the quality year-round activation and design, the safe, accessible, well-connected public environment, the meaning back to the community as community benefit, and long-term financial and operability that has been a priority of this council. Page 11, section selection and negotiation. This just allows for the city to, in the negotiation period, incorporate community benefit commitments, partnership agreements, and performance benchmarks that work in conjunction with the design of the chosen development. So those are the changes that are in the RFP. Move on to the evaluation, the project evaluation rubric. First of all, just want to make note that I've got my math wrong here. So on item two, if you will note, and we'll send out a revision after the council, but instead of 8%, this should reflect 5%. Under development team qualifications and local Alaska experience. This was largely adapted from the initial draft that we received and included the community values that we heard, again, safety, year-round activation, design concepts that reflect interior Alaska and an Arctic environment, as well as walkability, ADA accessibility, parking, and the financial feasibility component. That is not dependent on tax proposals or incentives from the city. And on the back, including community partnerships and ways that we ensure that there is equity through stakeholder engagement. Then moving on to page three, stage two. Again, math, not my forte, but item five should reflect 15% rather than 18%. And again, the stage two supplemental evaluation is to narrow down the developers, have a more thorough conversation about the outcomes and inputs of the developer to the community. So there is a mutually beneficial project that is built on that site. I also included, and it didn't quite print outright, but you'll see this handout just reviews, you know, what makes an RFP based in a just values, which includes all the things that I've already noted, as well as what came out, ironically, or maybe interestingly, in the community workshops that we held, focused on access and safety, equity and inclusion, and the community impact. So just provided this as a little guideline as we're looking at this RFP. Feel like, you know, we did a pretty thorough process. I feel good about where this is. The additions that we made to this RFP, again, are based in community benefits and communication, transparency, and equity. And, you know, without being overly prescriptive on a design or pushing a developer into a box that limits their creativity of what they do so well in their profession. Are there any questions? Mr. Kleeberg.
The RFP that you're amending here, was this the one before Councilmember Sprinkle worked on it, the original one, or is this based on the one that she had worked on?
This is the original one that we paid $35,000 to a consultant to do.
Thank you.
Yep. Ms. Sprinkle.
Would it be possible for us to see any of the survey answers? I'd be curious to see what
Certainly.
Those look like. I just love a good survey.
Yes. I have that information. I got it yesterday at about 3. So apologies for not being able to get that out to you today. I can also provide to you a one sheet on our listening sessions as well, so you can see that.
Fantastic.
So we'll follow up with you on that by the end of the day today.
Yeah, I guess I was just anxious to see how that cues up to the RFP. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Mr. Ringstead.
A couple of thoughts just kind of running through this on your side-by-side comparisons. Excuse me. Mixed income housing, mixed income or attainable housing were feasible. As I recall, the borough study said we had a significant percent of lower income in the downtown area, lower income housing. And I think I don't want to give a preference to lower income. If we can get some people living downtown that will be and can afford to shop and spend money downtown, that would be preferable to me. A couple other things. You've added Alaska Native cultural presence in several areas. And I remember I brought this up when we were looking at the borough's 2040 plan. I mean, it talked about the culture of Fairbanks was predominantly Native culture. And I think that there's, over the last 100 years, there's a lot more than Native culture that we should be, if we're going to talk about cultural stuff, we should kind of look at the broader Fairbanks and say, this is what made Fairbanks what it is today, and not just doing natives. And I notice you got one down here toward the end that's favorable consideration for partnerships with native organizations. And I don't think it's the government's position to be picking and choosing winners, that we pick and choose by race. And I think that's wrong for government to do.
Thank you, Mr. Ringstead. Mr. Kleeworth.
Yeah, this is the first time we've seen the evaluation and all of this, so it's a little hard to digest this quickly. But it says city-appointed project evaluation committee. I mean, normally when we do a project, it is evaluated by procurement, and I guess the other departments that are involved in that, possibly finance. I would think if you're buying a piece of equipment or something like that, wouldn't that be correct? But the evaluation is done inside the city. If it's a piece of equipment for public works, and who would evaluate that?
That's correct, Mr. Cleworth. That language was included by Mr. Hobie. As stated before, the evaluation committee will be internal to the city.
It'll consist of city personnel?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I'm not too keen on a two-step process, but whatever. And what is the appeals process? CB Bettis Earth, when he got up here, talked about a bad experience that they had had and being eliminated and what they thought were inappropriate standards or whatever. What would normally the appeal process, if I put in a bid and it's for a Olive Garden, say, and they say, well, this doesn't fit with what we want here in Fairbanks, how would I appeal that? Maybe a question more for the attorney.
I think it's an excellent question. So the procurement doesn't do the actual evaluation, but they do guide a lot of the appeal process. Of course, that's in code, the procedures, and ultimately our office gets involved to make sure that usually it's a notice thing that somebody says that they didn't get some notice of something, but we would step in at that point and manage that. But Chapter 54 of the code spells some of that out.
Ms. Rillette, if you want to speak, you're welcome to. Just please identify yourself for the record and speak into the microphone.
The code is very clear on how a protest would be operated. I mean, down to the days, to who does what. And again, that's in Chapter 54. The best way to avoid a protest is to make sure that we have clear guidelines on what's being evaluated and how that's going to be evaluated. Having a really clear rubric within the solicitation itself. So if it's a single chain restaurant that wants to build there, then we can specifically in the solicitation say this is not what we're looking for. But being very clear in how we're going to evaluate it will eliminate any ambiguity when our decision's made and people want to come and protest. I mean, anybody can protest for any reason, but we can, we just follow that process. But ultimately, the procurement process, like, first they protest to me. I give a very, very detailed letter on why we're sticking to our decision or like, hey, you did bring up good, valid points, whatnot. But if they don't like our decision at my office, then it gets moved up to the mayor's office. And I'm sure at that point she'd bring Tom in to really, for something as big as this, would definitely have legal input.
Would it stop at the mayor's office or does it go to council? I mean, what does the code say about council?
The code, it stops at the mayor's office. But there it's not stopping anybody from coming to the council. It's just the way our process is laid out.
I would just add that the mayor's decision, while final, is only the first step for a court battle, if that's necessary. So it's not like that's the ultimate. There's always a Superior Court challenge.
Do you have any more questions, Mr. Cleaver? Ms. Sprinkle?
New to me. This is, I've been struggling through this for about a year and a half, maybe 10. But I wonder if we get one submission, is that considered the final?
We don't have to award anything that we put out.
Okay.
We're not stuck to it. We can revamp the entire solicitation process and do it all over again if we don't get
we wouldn't be sued
responses.
For that. Okay, just check it. Thank mm-hmm. you. So it would be a fail. It wouldn't be a failed search. It would just be something we didn't like, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Thank you,
Mr. Marnie.
Did you have a chance to look at this packet? This new information.
I haven't been involved in the of this process at all until now, really.
Thank you.
Sprinkle? Trip to Harvard help do anything here, or is that just kind of on the sidelines of? Okay.
Yeah, yeah, we used this process as part of our project, and I hope to give you that presentation at the next work session. But the subject matter experts that we had around the table evaluated our RFP and our evaluation and gave us some insights, mm-hmm. advice.
Thank you. And this is supposed to hit the streets. I've forgotten the date now, according to our calendar.
May 1.
May 1. Thank you.
Any other feedback, questions, comments, concerns? Okay, great. Item 5 is the Finance Committee report. Ms. Bell.
Good morning, Council. Thank you, Mayor. The Finance Committee is scheduled to meet this Thursday in the Meeks Conference Room. We'll review the quarterly reports at this meeting for March 31st, 2026, and we'll also continue our discussion on parking services. And that is all we have scheduled for this Thursday.
Questions? Excellent. Okay, moving on to item 6, Mayor and Council Member comments. On your desk is another handout called the City Council Compass. So this is after the council and the mayor met on April 11th for our strategic planning. We spent 3 hours together and discussed our goals and objectives, our dreams and concerns of the next 10 years. And from those notes, I have summarized here a City Council Compass with a North Star as we discussed during that time. And I know you've just been able to see this just now, so if I've tried to keep it very simple and straightforward. But the question I do pose to the council is, does this feel accurate to our conversation? Does this reflect our shared values that we discussed at the time? And would just appreciate any feedback about that process. I guess any sort of thoughts about what came out of that, and if this looks like something that is accurate to what was discussed. Yeah, Ms. Sprinkle.
I enjoyed just spending the time with my fellow counselors, but I'd like to eat on this a little more before I really speak to it.
Yeah.
But I enjoyed the process, never done it before. That was kind of an eye-opening. Trust fall. We need a trust fall.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Mr. Ingstad, did you have something? Okay. Okay. All right, great. Well, thanks for that. And if there's any feedback or anything that you see missing, please let me know. This certainly isn't a directive of the mayor. This is a teamwork effort that we did together. I'm just your humble servant. Okay. An announcement, I will be giving the chamber presentation this afternoon at lunch, so wish me luck. It's the state of the city. And like I said, I returned back from Harvard last week. Mr. Sanders is still there taking some classes. Mr. Tigliano is there as well as part of the project team. Have to say that we were the best one. they saved us for last, and there was certainly a method to that. What we presented was far, and you know, I'm not going to pat myself on the back for, you know, out of line, but we certainly presented something that was far and above what the rest of the mayors across the nation presented. And we were complimented on our thoughtfulness, on the diligence of the process. There were several folks in the room who were kind of just tongue-tied about our situation. And I think that that should just be something that we all recognize, is that we're not in an easy place when we're looking at the revitalization of downtown and bringing it back, you know, reflecting everything from our history and mining and oil and Alaska Native culture, all the people that live here and all the ways that we serve this community. We're certainly headed in the right direction. I think we can find some solstice in that. And we got lots of compliments in that way. So I look forward to sharing with you that presentation in the future and with the staff as well. Any other comments? Mr. Kleber.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. Just about the survey itself, who was receiving, where was that survey going when we responded to it?
We were assisted by Fast Planning, and then they sent the information to us.
How many people responded to that survey?
136? 103? Oh, 300.
And who's, how are we analyzing that?
Very carefully.
I mean, the responses, can we, is there some way that we can read those responses?
I will send you the 63-page document.
63 page?
63 pages.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You're welcome. So. Ms. Sprinkle.
I bet you could run that through whatever AI thing, and it would congregate and analyze those. I know, baby. I'm just saying. You got that? You could do real data. I'm not taking that away from you. I just think it'd be interesting to see what that it bubbled up and like a word cloud.
We have some initial analysis that I'll present today at the chamber.
Oh, good.
Yeah, that'll just be really high level. But yeah, it was exciting to see what we came back with. A lot of it reflected back what we heard in the work, the focus groups.
Good.
Yeah.
Can I make a comment to?
Of course.
Okay. Yeah. I just wanted to say thank you to Jared. I am so proud of this program, and I really feel like the blight program and what you're doing to clean up and making the things that have tortured me for decades when I think of our town. I think, why can't we make this better? And I think your personality and the way you approach things is beautiful to the kind of people that you're having to work with, and I appreciate the work you're doing. And I have questions I'll ask offline, but I am so proud of that program. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thanks for your work in getting it up and started.
I had something too.
Of course.
Thank you to the people who did the entryway to City Hall. Looks a million times better. Yeah. Cool. And safer.
Mr. Ringstad, any comments?
First problem is solved, and Larry, Lonnie, and I just torture you for now. You said you're not being, you were being tortured for decades with this stuff. He's got it all taken care of, and I thought maybe Lonnie and I could volunteer to continue that torture process. Break your other arm or something.
Mr. Barney?
Well, I just wanted to ditto what Sue just indicated. You're the right man for the job, and it was, we have been so lucky to find people like you and Chief Kakaro and the rest of the staff that just adds to making the city a better place to live. Thank you.
Ms. Tidwell.
Just to speak a little bit to the, there's a newspaper article in the paper today about the Chena River project, and we did have the Fast Planning meeting last week. We kind of broke that conversation into two different subject matters, one being purchasing the property from the railroad, which the policy board voted to move ahead with that, and then the other part of the actual project. The decision was made to let DOT bring back some additional lower cost ideas and kind of make a direction from there. And I didn't know if the mayor maybe had some additional comments on that.
That's pretty pretty good.
I did read that it was discussed that the borough take on maintenance, and I thought that was a good discussion to have because no one owned it.
And that's been, that same conversation has been kind of riding along with the project the whole time, so that wasn't a surprise. They have indicated that that's, yeah.
Yeah. Question two. One, I appreciate your vote, even though you're on the losing end there on the one issue. If you go ahead and buy the property and the project doesn't pan out, it is indeed seven, not 3 million or whatever it turns out, what was the discussion on the situation then? What do you do with the property?
Well, I think DOT has a lot of data and numbers that they've put together that they haven't shared, and that's what they're going to bring back to us. And with that understanding that some of the stuff that they have talked about and looked at does not have that same price tag. I can't remember. We actually put a threshold on that. Like, we wanted to see stuff at half the cost. Mm-hmm. And DOT felt like they could do that, no problem.
So they're being tasked with doing that at this point?
Yeah. They volunteered to bring it. If my understanding is they have actually done that work. They just haven't brought it to us. So they're going to compile everything that they have on the project and things that they've talked about internally and show us those options, which haven't been brought forward, that would fall into that half price category, fast planning. I believe by the next meeting, she was going to bring that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Just kind of ironic since DOT voted against the thing, so but okay, mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Yeah, we did ask them why they voted against it. Ms. Little expressed her concern regarding the council resolution and wanted to back that up. And then Czarnecki, can't remember why he said, but they both said on the record, Mr. Cleworth, why they voted against it. And it was enough for me to feel like it would be truthful when they're coming back with revised documents.
If the policy board goes ahead with it, they're going to be tasked with the engineering portion of it.
Yeah.
They'll have to back up what they say.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Any other comments? All good? Okay. Next regular work session is Tuesday, May 5th, 2026 at 8 a.m. And we're adjourned at 9:13. Thanks, everyone.